You know, we spend a lot of time these days obsessing over disruption.
Oh, definitely.
Like we talk about the gig economy or AI, like we're the very first generation to ever deal with a shifting landscape. We act like pivoting is this brand new concept invented in some Silicon Valley garage in 1999.
It does feel uniquely modern, doesn't it? That
Good.
anxiety that the ground is just constantly shifting under your feet.
It does, but then I look at the stack of documents we have for today. We've got narrative biographies, city directories, and these incredible memoirs from a woman named Vannetta Spencer. And I realize we are total amateurs.
We really are.
We are looking at the lives of Vannetta Spencer and her husband, Wesley Robbins. And honestly, their lives make modern hustle culture look like a relaxing spa weekend.
That is a very fair assessment.
Yeah.
I mean, we are talking about a timeline that starts with log cabins and horse-drawn wagons and irrigation ditches, and it ends in a world of investment banking, corporate suburbs, and global
Which
telecommunications.
is just a massive leap for one single
It
lifetime.
is. But for Vannetta and Wes, it wasn't history. You know, it was just Tuesday. And that is exactly what makes today's deep dive so compelling. We aren't just looking at a biography, we are looking at a masterclass in survival.
Right. And looking at the listener feedback from our previous deep dives, I want to make sure we really get into the mechanics of this today. We aren't just going to list the dates. We're going to figure out how a couple goes from selling candy to running a high-tech radio business to navigating the Great Depression to becoming civic leaders during the war.
And what stands out to me in these sources is the partnership. This isn't just a story about a husband going to work and a wife staying home, even though it might have looked like that from the outside sometimes.
Right, it looked traditional on paper.
Exactly on paper. But this is actually about a partnership marriage in the early 20th century. It's about how two people navigated incredible economic turbulence by constantly reinventing themselves.
And we should probably warn you listening right now, this isn't some soft, sepia-toned romance. There is grit here. There is sheer economic terror. And there is a very disturbing incident involving a rooster.
The rooster incident.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really explains a lot about Vannetta's character right out of the gate.
Let's start there, actually, because usually when we hear about a woman born in 1897 in Salt Lake City, we picture a very domestic, quiet, maybe sentimental upbringing, you know, maybe some embroidery on the porch.
And Vannetta was none of those things. She was born in the Sugar House area, which was entirely rural at the time. And the source material makes it very clear she was not sentimental. She was extremely practical.
Okay, take us to the rooster because this story actually made me wince when I read it.
So she's a little girl, she's outside playing, and she's holding a piece of bread and jam. A rooster sees the bread and decides he wants it. Now, most kids, and honestly, probably most adults, would drop the bread and run. Vannetta doesn't.
She holds the line over a piece of bread and jam.
She holds the bread, and the rooster attacks. It doesn't just peck her either, it actually tears a piece of her nose off.
I just can't even imagine the medical response in 1900. You don't exactly have a plastic surgeon on speed dial.
There wasn't much of a medical response at all. And here is the key insight, the thing that really defines her. She carried that physical reminder, that missing piece of her nose, into her 90s. But when she writes about it later in her memoir, she doesn't ask for pity.
She just states it.
Exactly. It's just a fact. The rooster ate my nose. Move on. That grit defined her entire life.
That stoicism really seems to be her operating system. She loses her mother young, her father remarries, and she just keeps moving.
She treats life like a ledger. A bad thing happens, you log it, and you move on. She goes to Hanager's Business College, which was a huge deal for a young woman then. She wasn't just waiting around to get married, she was actively training.
Right. She worked as an inspector and a bookkeeper at the Paris Company.
Yes, she had hard practical skills.
So she's entering adulthood with a very specific set of tools, accounting inspection, and apparently a very high pain tolerance.
Precisely. And then you have Wes. Born in 1899 in Oakley, Idaho, if Vannetta was urban grit, Wes was frontier enterprise.
His dad, Lorenzo, sounds like quite the character, too.
Lorenzo was a serial entrepreneur. He moves the family from a two-room log cabin to a brick home with indoor plumbing, which was incredibly high-tech for rural Idaho in 1906. He's planting orchards, running a store, starting an implement company.
So Wes grows up hearing business strategy at the dinner table.
Exactly. For Wes, farming wasn't just about survival or subsistence, it was enterprise. It was a business.
And that mindset is crucial, right? He sees his dad take risks, move the family, expand cell. So when Wes moves to Salt Lake City in 1915 and then joins the Marines in 1918, he's already primed for a life of action.
And the Marines piece is interesting because he didn't see combat in World War I.
Right, no combat.
He spent his time at Mare Island in California. But the military gave him something else. Structure. Hierarchy. Discipline. He comes out of the Marines in 1922 with a deep sense of order that he tries to apply to the generally chaotic world of business.
Okay, so the stage is set. You have the bookkeeper with the grit and the Marine with the entrepreneurial DNA. They meet on a blind date, get married in 1923, and boom, we are in the roaring 20s. And this is where the story gets really fun because they don't just settle down, they hustle.
They absolutely hustle. They move to Ogden, Utah, and Wes is working for R.G. Dunn and Company.
Now, for you listeners who don't speak 1920s business terminology, what exactly is R.G. Dunn?
It's the precursor to Dunn & Bradstreet. Basically, they were the credit reporters of the era. Wes's job was to investigate other businesses and determine if they were creditworthy. It's a fascinating job for an aspiring entrepreneur because you get to look under the hood of hundreds of companies.
You see exactly what works and what fails.
Right. You see the mechanics of failure and success.
So he's getting a real-world MBA, but he can't resist the urge to run his own show.
No, he can't. Enter the sweet shop.
They open a confectionery, but listen to the logistics of the setup. They actually lived behind the store.
It was a total tag team operation.
Yeah.
Vanetta worked the nights, Wes worked the days. They're selling ice cream cigars magazines. It's a total grind. But then they do something that I think is the very first sign of their genius for reinvention. They see a new technology emerging.
This is the pivot that really surprised me. They go from candy to high tech.
They see radio coming. Now, for us, radio is old news. But in the mid-20s, radio was like the internet in the late 90s or AI right now. It was the future. It was the thing that was going to change the entire world. So they pivot.
Right. The Robin Confectionery transforms into Robin's Radio and Supply Company Incorporated.
That is not a small jump. That requires technical knowledge, supply chains.
Well,
how do you just switch from selling suckers to selling circuits?
Well, Wes had that technical curiosity, and Vanetta had the organizational brain. And here is a detail from the deep dive sources that I absolutely love. In 1929, when they incorporate the business, Wes is listed as president. Do you know who is listed as secretary treasurer?
Vanetta.
Exactly, Vanetta. She wasn't just the wife in the back room helping out. She was a corporate officer. She was handling the administration and the books. This was a true partnership in both the legal and practical sense.
But just as they are hitting their stride, you know, incorporated tech-forward young family, something dark hangs over them. And I'm not just talking about the economy.
No, Wes contracts rheumatic fever in the late 20s. Today, we treat it easily with antibiotics, but back then it often meant permanent heart damage. That illness shadowed him for the rest of his life.
It was a ticking clock that influenced a lot of his decisions later on. He couldn't get life insurance. He knew his time might be short.
And then the clock runs out on the global economy. 1929, the crash.
The depression hits Ogden like a sledgehammer. By 1933, unemployment in Utah is over 35%. That is catastrophic. It's much higher than the national average. And the independent radio business, well, it just fades from the records. People can't buy luxury radios when they can't buy bread.
This is where the theme of risk versus stability really kicks in for them. Wes has a choice. Does he keep fighting as an entrepreneur trying to force this radio business to work, or does he fold?
He pivots to stability. And this is a really hard thing for an entrepreneur to do. He goes from being the president of his own company to being an employee. He takes a job at Glenn Brothers Music. He trades the potential upside of ownership for the steady paycheck of a manager.
Because by now they have kids, right? Bud, Sharon, Renee, and eventually Dick. You just can't gamble when you have mouths to feed.
Exactly. And the sources give us this incredible glimpse into their family resilience during the 30s. There's a story about their son, Bud. He's just a kid, maybe junior high age, and he wants extra money. So he gets a paper route for the Salt Lake Tribune.
Which you hear paper route, and it sounds quaint. You picture a kid tossing newspapers onto manicured lawns in a quiet neighborhood.
Except his route was the south side of 25th Street in Ogden.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. For those who know Ogden history, 25th Street was notorious. It was called Two-Bit Street. Bars, prostitution, gambling, rough crowds coming off the Union Pacific trains. And here's this kid from a devout religious family on a bicycle navigating that world just to earn a few extra bucks.
It really highlights the contrast. The family is respectable, civic-minded, but they are living right on the edge of this rough, gritty reality.
And they moved a lot, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
The directory listings show them bouncing from rental to rental throughout the 30s.
Why so much moving?
Rent chasing.
Mm-hmm.
It was very common during the Depression. You moved where the rent was $2 cheaper, or where the landlord was more forgiving, or where the job was closer so you could save on tram fare. It was an entire decade of scrambling just to stay afloat.
But they survived it. They made it to the 1940s, and then the world changes again. World War II starts, and Ogden becomes a boomtown because of Hill Field and the defense depots, and suddenly Wes and Vanetta aren't just surviving anymore, they become major players.
This is the transformation that fascinates me the most. The Depression was about survival. The war years were about leadership. Wes doesn't just manage the music store. He explodes into civic life. Listen to this list of roles he held simultaneously. Post commander of the American Legion, vice chairman of the Red Cross, chair of the Days of 47 parade, civilian defense training officer.
Wait, civilian defense training officer? That sounds very official, but what did it actually mean in Utah during the war?
It meant preparing for the worst. It meant organizing air raid blackouts. It meant training people on what to do if the Japanese bombed the rail lines or the supply depots at Hill Field. This wasn't some ceremonial title. He was directly responsible for the safety of the community.
He was the guy organizing the blood drives, the bond rallies. He became a genuine public figure. And what about Vanetta? Was she at home baking victory cookies?
Far from it. And this challenges the narrative we often have of the 1940s housewife. Yes, she was president of the American Legion Ladies Auxiliary, and she was secretary of the Relief Society at her church. But the records show she also returned to the workforce.
Really? A paid job?
Yes. She worked at the administrative branch of the new specialized depot at Hill Field. She was part of the war machine. She stepped back into a paid role because the country needed labor. And frankly, the family probably could use the extra money to get fully back on their feet after the Depression.
So you have the husband running the civilian defense and the Red Cross, and the wife working administration at the military depot, all while raising four kids.
It's the definition of a power couple, 1940s style. They defined themselves as civic leaders during this era. They weren't just merchants anymore. They were pillars of the community.
So the war ends. The economy booms. You think, okay, time to relax. Time to enjoy the suburbs. But Wes, he just couldn't sit still, could he?
Never. The entrepreneurial itch came right back. In 1948, a salesman from Kimball Pianos convinced Wes that he should open his own shop again. So what do? They uproot everything and move to Great Falls, Montana.
Montana. That is not a small move.
No, it's not. They opened Robin's Music Company. And by all accounts, the business was a success. Vanetta was back in the store selling, managing. But there was a major problem.
The health shadow returns.
Right. The Montana winters were brutal. Wes and their daughter Renee were constantly ill. And this is a really poignant moment in the sources. They had the success they wanted. They were owners again, but they chose health. They closed up shop and moved back.
It's a sobering reminder that success isn't just about the profit and loss statement. Sometimes success is knowing exactly when to fold them. So they bounce around a bit, Pocatello, then back to Utah. And Wes ends up back at Glenn Brothers Music, this time in Provo.
And this leads to my absolute favorite detail about Vanetta's career. Wes is managing the Provo store. An employee quits unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
So Wes asks Vanetta, hey, can you just come help out temporarily until I find someone?
I feel like I know where this is going. How long is temporarily?
10 years.
10 years.
For 10 years, she was the temporary help. She sold pianos. She sold organs. She kept the books. She was the absolute engine of that store.
You know, that framing is so specific to that era. I'm just helping out my husband. But in reality, she was a seasoned professional with 30 years of experience.
Exactly. She wasn't just helping out. She was a professional who happened to be married to the boss. I think it really speaks to her competence. She could step into any gap and fill it perfectly.
I love that image. She's out there selling organs and balancing the ledger, probably thinking any day now he'll hire that replacement.
And meanwhile, Wes is entering his final act. In the 1960s, his heart condition really catches up with him. He undergoes heart valve surgery, which was a massive, highly risky procedure back then.
But he doesn't retire.
No. He shifts gears yet again. He goes into investment banking.
From horse-drawn wagons to investment banking, that is quite the arc.
He works for Bonneville Securities. He literally refused to sit idle. He went from the frontier to the corporate era, selling stocks and bonds. He worked until he physically couldn't.
Wes passes away in 1973. Vanetta lives another 18 years until 1991. She makes it to 94. And this brings us to the most unique source we have, which is her memoir. She wrote it when she was 92.
And the style of this memoir is so telling. It's direct. It's strictly chronological. She doesn't write about her feelings. She writes about addresses. She tracks their life by where they lived, what illnesses they had, and what jobs they held.
It sounds almost like a ledger.
It is a ledger of a life. But without it all, we would have her some old city directories. Because she wrote it down We see the togetherness. We see that every time Wes moved, she packed the house. Every time he started a business, she learned the books. Every time the economy crashed, she found a way to make the household run.
It's incredible to think about the timeline here. She was born before the Wright brothers flew, and she died the year the World Wide Web was introduced to the public. She saw the frontier close and the suburbs open.
And she documented it with that exact same unsentimental practicality she showed when the rooster bit her nose. This happened, then this happened, then we moved here. It's a true testament to resilience.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Why should you care about a music store manager and a bookkeeper from Utah?
Because they are the ultimate archetype of the 20th century working couple. We often look back and think of very clear gendered lanes. Men did this, women did that. But Wes and Vanetta show us the messy collaborative reality. They were partners and business partners in civic duty and partners in survival. They reinvented themselves every decade because they had to.
It makes you wonder about the invisible labor in history.
That's the provocative thought I want to leave you with. When we look at history, we often see the great men leading the parades and chairing the committees like Wes was in the newspapers. But how many businesses, how many communities were actually held together by the quiet, skilled competence of the Vanettas keeping the books in the back room?
The ones who turned temporary help into a 10-year career.
Exactly. The ones who ensure the business actually has a profit to report at the end of the day.
That is a powerful thought. So here's a challenge for everyone listening. Next time you're talking to an older relative, a grandparent, a great aunt, don't just ask them where they lived. Ask them how they survived the changes.
Ask about the side hustles. Ask about the temporary jobs. Ask about the pivots.
You might find a story just as fascinating as Wes and Vanetta's, and hopefully one with slightly fewer roosters.
Let's hope so.
That's all for this deep dive. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.